Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Time and again, the measure was defeated or delayed. Time and again, we've been reminded of the difficulty of building a nation in which we're all free to live and love as we see fit.
We are fully prepared to defend any of our members of National Religious Broadcasters if they're wrongfully prosecuted under this hate crimes law.
We believe that homophobia, not homosexuality, is a sin. We also believe in freedom of the pulpit for all religious people, and this bill has nothing to do with freedom of the pulpit.
As citizens of Maine, we oppose attempts to grant the legal status of marriage to a relationship between persons of the same sex.
For me, this is a vote about equality. It's about civil rights. It's about doing what I think Jesus would do.
Divorce is a sad reality in our country, and one that appears to be fully entrenched now in our legal system, our family system, our culture. And of course, no-fault divorce has brought along with it a whole new raft of problems, social problems, family problems, you name it. What about the courts in all of this, especially the family courts? We know how mother fares. We know how children fares. Of course, none of it's really good. What about father? Do the family courts discriminate against fathers? And is this a symptom of a larger problem in our society? And what role does feminism play in all of this? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live this Friday afternoon. It's the 6th of November. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE. Our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us at @IssuesETC. We're going to talk about the war against fathers. Dr. Stephen Baskerville joins us, and then in about a half hour, the Issues Etc. soundbite of the week, 1-877-623-6943, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at @IssuesETC. Dr. Stephen Baskerville is assistant professor of government at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia. He's author of the new book, Taken into Custody, The War Against Father, Marriage, and the Family. Dr. Baskerville, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Do the family courts discriminate against fathers?
Yes, they do, but that is, as you say, symptomatic of a much bigger problem. It's not, as the feminists say, simply discrimination or gender bias. These courts are based on a fundamental conflict of interest. They are run by government officials and private interests that have a vested interest in separating children from their fathers. The first thing that a divorce court does, the first thing a family court does, is take the children away from the father, sometimes the mother, but more often the father, one of the parents. Without that happening, family courts have no reason to exist. They don't have any justification for everything else they do. But once that happens, everything else kicks in. The lawyers, the judges, the psychotherapists, the social workers, everybody starts to, their tasks start to kick in, and they start to make either power or money. So the first principle of family court is take the children from the father. And this is obviously unacceptable. We decry this fatherhood crisis, this crisis of fatherless children, and yet we allow these courts to operate in secret in this way, to separate children from large numbers of loving, perfectly responsible fathers, and then we turn around and say the fathers have abandoned their children. This is absurd. This needs to be investigated, and it needs to be discussed publicly.
Before family courts and before the strong prevalence of divorce and no-fault divorce, what usually happened? What was the legal recourse then?
Well, traditionally, divorce was based on grounds, like every other legal proceeding. You had to have done something wrong. There had to be some reason for the courts, for the government to intervene in your private life. Traditionally, government is not supposed to involve itself in our private lives unless we give it some kind of reason for doing so, some kind of grounds or some kind of fault or some kind of transgression, legally speaking. This is the only legal proceeding I know of where the courts intervene in your life without you having done anything wrong. Your spouse filing for divorce is enough for the courts to move in, separate you from your children, separate you from your home, separate you from your property, separate you from even your earnings. And in fact, you can be arrested for all of these things, for failing to obey the court, for staying away from your own children and home and property. You can be arrested and jailed without trial. This is an astoundingly intrusive government machinery that we're allowing to operate here, and we've never had any discussion or dialogue about why we allow this in the 40 years since we created no-fault divorce.
Is no-fault divorce really the genesis of the family court system?
It's the codification. This was happening before no-fault divorce. No-fault divorce simply recognized it in the law. And this was happening for years. But with no-fault divorce in the early 70s, it kind of threw open the floodgates and gave it legal sanction. From this point on, you could be the courts could simply tear up your marriage contract without you agreeing to it or without giving any reason for it, merely at the petition of one, at the request of one spouse.
Okay, so go back, if you could, and explain to us, because for most people, especially younger people growing up in a divorce culture, they cannot conceive of what divorce was legally before it was simply the court dissolving the marriage contract, as you say, to the detriment of both parties, but especially to that of dad's. How did it go before? You said that it had to be, there had to be a fault, there had to be a wrong, and it had to be investigated and had to be tried in court.
That's right. People are under a whole series of misconceptions because this whole area is covered by cliches and euphemisms. When we hear about divorce, we think of two people deciding to part ways. We think of two people deciding to forego their marriage vows and to separate. This is not what is happening. It is a power grab, usually by one spouse. 80% of the divorces in this country are unilateral. They are perpetrated by one spouse acting alone without the knowledge or agreement of the other spouse. That spouse usually has been briefed by the bar associations or by the feminists or by a lawyer at the very least to snatch the children and run. This is the usual MO in these cases. The mother takes the children and leaves, goes to a battered women's shelter, goes to a relative's house, or levels charges of domestic violence or child abuse against the father without any necessary evidence being presented. In other words, the courts have basically told, and the feminists have told the mothers, grab the kids and go. You have nothing to lose and you have everything to gain. And that's what's happening in these courts. It's kind of an implicit contract that has been made with one parent, usually the mother. If you file for divorce, you will gain everything. You will get the children, you will get the home, you will get the family savings, you will get a good portion of his earnings. You can even get your legal fees paid by him. And if he raises any objection to this, we can jail him without trial. It is astounding that this is happening. And occasionally fathers do it to mothers if they have an inside track, if they have some knowledge of the system. So it's a kind of race to the courthouse. It's kind of whoever files for divorce first wins.
That doesn't sound like no-fault divorce. That sounds like, at least as it comes out usually, that sounds like dad's fault in divorce.
In practice, that's what it becomes. That's precisely it. You cannot have a legal proceeding. You cannot have the penal system, the judicial system, intervening against people without coming up with some kind of punishments. Otherwise, they can't, their edicts are not obeyed. So you're right. And essentially what it does become is a presumption of guilt against the father. And that presumption of guilt takes various forms. The father is, again, he can be arrested for trying to see his children without authorization. He can be arrested for not paying child support, which may exceed his income and which he's done nothing to owe. He can be arrested if he's charged with domestic violence or child abuse, even if there's no evidence he's committed any. He can even be arrested for failing to pay an attorney that he hasn't hired. This is perhaps the most astounding thing of all. The fathers are ordered to pay attorneys they haven't hired, and they are jailed if they are unable or unwilling to do so.
But how would you respond to someone who says, look, don't children belong with their mothers, and if the court has to choose between father and mother, they should choose mother?
That's a good point, very common argument. The court doesn't have to choose. The court does not have to choose. We're put in a situation where the court can simply say no, just say no, as we say. The court said there's no grounds for removing this child from his or her father, even temporarily. You have no grounds for doing so. The father and the mother has 24-hour access to their own children anytime they want to. And the purpose of this court is not to abrogate the child-parent bond. It's to enforce it. We will guarantee the parent-child bond. Neither parent has any right to separate the children from the other. You married. Nobody forced you to marry. Now deal with it. This is what the courts could say. If the courts said that, of course, there would be no earnings for lawyers, for judges, for psychotherapists, for custody evaluators, guardians ad litem, social workers. Nobody would have any purpose for existing if the courts ruled that way. So what the courts do instead is they take the children from the father. And they say, well, this is only temporary. The father can have the children back. But what it means is effectively the burden of proof and the financial burden falls upon the father to justify why his children should be returned. In other words, the government takes the children from the father without any burden of proof of showing why. They just say it's temporary. But then it's temporary until the burden of proof falls on the father then to prove why his children should be returned. They don't have to prove he's been a bad father. He has to prove he's been a good one. And that's an impossible burden of proof.
It sounds like you are describing, Dr. Baskerville, a divorce industry.
Very much so. Very much so. This is a rogue industry. This is a rogue judiciary that has gone off. The very nature of no-fault divorce is not concerned with justice. Once you expurgate justice from the legal system, you bring about injustice. Augustine said this. He said, without justice, what are kingdoms but great robberies? And when you remove justice from the court system, they turn into a money-making operation. And that's precisely what they have become. St. Augustine's prediction on that couldn't have been more accurate.
Dr. Stephen Baskerville is our guest. He's assistant professor of government at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia, author of the new book, Taken into Custody, The War Against Father, Marriage, and the Family. You can purchase Taken into Custody under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. We have 10 more minutes with Dr. Baskerville on this subject after the break. Good time to email us or call us. TalkBack@issuesetc.org. TalkBack@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. We're coming to you live this Friday afternoon, November the 6th. 1-877-623-6943. When we come back, how do we fix it? Is it fixable? And should we settle for a divorce culture? Divorce as a fact of modern life. 1-877-623-6943. TalkBack@issuesetc.org. Or you can Twitter us at @issuesetc. Stay tuned.
He's right there in my eyes, staring back at me. And I realize the older I get, the more I can see how much he loved my mother and my brother and me. And he did the best that he could. And I only hope when I have my...
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org. And click On Demand Audio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois, is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for next year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2010. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. 300.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with cupful if you're a double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
The Christian has a God who has had a funeral himself. I mean, isn't that incredible?
We have a tendency to analyze how we're feeling about God or how I'm getting along with God, irrespective of the incarnation or the atonement of Jesus Christ.
What happened to the dinosaurs is very simple. You can sum it up in two words. They died. Lots of animals have died out since the flood. Lots of animals.
Okay, pal, do you believe there's life after death? And the Richard Dawkins would say, no, I'm confident that there isn't. And you say, but how do you know? What information do you have that the religious believer doesn't have? And it turns out, none at all.
In about 20 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Soundbites from Pastor Brian Wolf Miller, Pastor Clement Preuss, Ken Ham, and Dinesh D'Souza for you to pick from. 1-877-622-3694-3 or talk back at issuesetc.org. We're talking about the war against fathers, especially in the no-fault divorce system and industry. Dr. Stephen Baskerville is our guest. Is there any repairing the system that we have and getting it to work rightly so that there is not this judicial bias against fathers and against dads?
We need a dialogue about this. We need a discussion about under what circumstances we're going to allow children to be taken away from their parents, their fathers or their mothers. We need a dialogue about what we mean by divorce and what exactly is meant by no-fault divorce and what we are prepared to permit. We need a dialogue about what is meant by child abuse, by domestic violence, by what is the purpose of child support. This whole panoply of issues, all of which are subservient to the divorce system, and all of which are basically geared to subsidizing or justifying the separation of children from their fathers. And the basic, I think if I had to reduce this to one basic principle that needs to be upheld in this country, it is the principle that no one has the right to take away people's children without showing a cause, because that's what they're doing. They take away your children without giving any reason other than waving a piece of paper that says divorce, even if you haven't agreed to it, even if you haven't given any grounds for it. And this will spill over into a whole lot of other issues as well, issues of the rights of homeschoolers, for example. We at Patrick Henry College, well, at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and others, parentsrights.org, are defending the rights of parents to raise their children, to educate their children as they see fit. There are many parents, even in intact families, that are accused of child abuse on the most spurious grounds because we have no central definition of what is child abuse. So this whole area, we've allowed a lot of government officials, bureaucrats, and social workers to use our children as pawns in a big game of power. And we need to rein this in. We need to start discussing this in the media. So the Christian media in particular has to start this, and I certainly applaud what you're doing here. But the conservative and Christian media have to take the lead on this much more than they have been.
What do you make of the term deadbeat dad?
The deadbeat dad, I've looked at this thoroughly, and this is documented in my book. The deadbeat dad is mostly a hoax. You can find examples of anything, but the deadbeat dad is a creation of the government. The typical deadbeat dad is a loving, responsible father who's been divorced without his agreement, over his objections, who's been ordered to pay extortionate amounts in child support. And I'm talking about 60, 70, 80, 90%, sometimes over 100% of his income in child support. And then when he can't pay, quite predictably, he is then subject to the penal system, including incarceration. And this is absurd. We hear this hysteria about deadbeat dads. And I have come to the conclusion that you can find isolated examples of anything. But the phenomenon of the non-payment of child support is entirely, almost entirely, a creation of government policy.
What role, if any, has a feminist philosophy and views of government, the legal system, and the family played in all of this?
Feminism has provided the ideological subtext throughout the entire divorce machinery, and this is not well known, and it should be. The feminists were drafting no-fault divorce legislation as early as the 1940s, and they were getting it approved by the family law sections of the bar associations. The family law sections are dominated by feminists. So divorce is, there's no doubt about it, the divorce phenomenon is not just people deciding to part ways. It is an ideological attack on men, on fathers, on husbands, by organized feminism. It's not perceived that way, but it is the most devastating weapon in the entire gender war arsenal because it brings the gender war into every family, every household in America, which in ways that it is not readily perceived. But the feminists are the driving force behind the domestic violence industry, the child abuse, the abuse of child abuse, allegations, and the child support system, which is really just a massive subsidy on divorce and single-parent homes.
What was the feminist rationale under which they promoted no-fault divorce? What was their reasoning, legal and otherwise?
Well, the striking thing is they haven't had to justify it. People have not perceived it as a feminist initiative. And so they have not. There has been no discussion. The striking thing, since the first no-fault divorce law came through in 1969, there has been virtually no public discussion about the meaning of this or what the consequences of this are. And this is striking that the feminists or the lawyers, for that matter, have not been forced to justify any of this. They use cliches like bad marriage, and they, of course, they invoke domestic abuse. But the way they define it, domestic abuse can be anything. Calling names or yelling at your spouse is domestic abuse, according to these definitions. So it's basically nihilism that reigns in the divorce system. You can be divorced for any reason or no reason.
This email comes from Sean in North Dakota. He asks, television used to portray fathers as wise and strong. Examples, Charles Ingalls, John Walton, Andy Griffith, etc. Today, in the media, dad is Homer Simpson and Ed Bundy. How much does this portrayal of men by the media affect what you're talking about?
I think it has a huge effect. We've been conditioned by this media portrayal of dads as buffoons and as irresponsible and as deadbeats and so forth. What most people don't realize is how far this media caricature has been translated into specific legal penalties. In other words, the father is not just an object of ridicule, and he can be arrested and jailed without trial. So a lot of men and fathers are afraid to object to the media portrayal because they don't want to seem petty. It seems petty to complain about how you're portrayed in the media. But when they show up at your door with handcuffs, or when they show up at your door and say they're taking your children away, you realize that it's not petty at all. It's very serious.
What role has the sexual revolution played in this? I mean, feminism and the sexual revolution go hand in hand in many ways, but what role is there for the sexual revolution in all of this?
Again, I think it's been huge. I'm talking about my generation and those of us who grew up in the 60s and the 70s, we thought that we could indulge in these cohabitation and out-of-wedlock sex and so forth without any consequences. And now we're seeing that there are consequences. And the consequences are being directed largely at parents and at men and at children. In other words, the feminists have politicized this. We thought we could have out-of-wedlock sex at whim, but they're turning it into rape allegations. We thought we could have children out of wedlock, but the feminists are creating the child support system and the domestic abuse industry. So the consequences have been politicized by the feminists. But in some ways, it's the fault of all of us. We're all sinners in this regard, or many of us are.
Steve is listening in his car. Steve, thank you for waiting.
Hey, you know what I find interesting is, and please don't take this the wrong way, but what I refer to this as talking to my wife is, in some respects, you can call it the bastardization of America. And what I mean by that is, if you look at the number of children born without fathers, it's amazing. And my wife has a friend who could afford it. She had two children through the miracle science, otherwise known as sperm donors. And now she's struggling because, well, she's doing it on her own, and there's no father. But this is the consequence of the world we now live in.
Thank you very much, Steve. Your thoughts there, Dr. Baskerville?
Yes, it very much is. I would only add to that, thanks to a lot of conservative and Christian commentators, it is becoming well known that the terrible problem of 25 million children living without their fathers. What is not well known, and what I've tried to emphasize in the book, is the extent to which this is being forced on. It is not just the fathers abandoning their children, as the cliche goes. It is the government that is often, usually in fact, forcibly separating the children from their fathers.
Why have feminists resisted joint custody? It seems like a good first step would be a return to a concept and a possibility of joint custody.
It is striking, isn't it? Because it would seem to be the fulfillment of precisely the feminist ideal, the androgynous, the fathers taking more role in the raising of the children and relieving the mothers. You'd think the feminists would be out in front of that. But oddly enough, it's just the opposite. The feminists are the biggest resistors of joint custody or shared parenting. And it's a classic example of what Orwell pointed out in his writing in Animal Farm and elsewhere, that when it's principles versus power, power tends to win. Both genders are equal, but one, when it comes to the custody of children, one gender is more equal than the other.
The media maybe in this respect is kind of behind the times, because often when they depict divorce popularly, it is joint custody. It's the kid one weekend at mom's house, one weekend at dad's house, shared custody. It doesn't sound like that's actually the norm. We've only got a minute before our break.
No, it's not the norm. If both parents agree to it, then it can happen. But if one parent is, the mother is intransigent about that, then it is not. And unfortunately, the bottom line is this, is that we have turned children into the weapons in a power game. And that's why the feminists and many mothers refuse to yield joint custody, because it's not about principles. It's about power. And unfortunately, children, because of the no-fault system and the family courts, children are the pawns in this power struggle.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll have a few more minutes with Dr. Stephen Baskerville, author of the book Taken into Custody, The War Against Father Marriage and the Family, assistant professor of government at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia. Our subject, the war against fathers, especially in the divorce system and industry. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, so if this is what we're left with, how do we, given the fact that divorce is going to happen, how do we repair the system beyond simply making people aware that this is what's going on? And has no-fault divorce and the result in the alienation of fathers from their families, has it created an illusion? That is, that women can raise all the children all by themselves. Well, not really all by themselves, as long as the distant dad is paying hefty child support. Is that an illusion too? Stay tuned. In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc. and you.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Human dignity at stake.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The practice of IVF technology allows for hundreds of thousands of frozen human embryos to be created in laboratories with no clear plan for their future. Unable to come to a consensus on the moral status of these tiny human beings, the parents, scientists, and politicians involved often postpone a final decision. Allowing the smallest humans to languish with no clear protection calls into question the moral status of all human beings. As Albert Mohler points out, we cannot fool ourselves into thinking that this essential question of human dignity will be restricted to frozen embryos in a laboratory.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Hey, mother!
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the war against fathers in the divorce industry and the legal system. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Stephen Baskerville is our guest. Let's go straight to the phones in Tampa, Florida. Dean is on the line. Dean, welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Baskerville is a colleague of mine. His book, Taken into Custody, is a seminal book, and it's a must-read, not just by the legislature, but by all attorneys, judges, nationally, social workers, child protection team workers. I get involved in these cases firsthand. I'm an expert in these cases, and my website is abuse-excuse.com. But I do want to recommend three changes in the system, two of which Stephen I know is familiar with. One is going back to a fault-based divorce system. from 40 years ago. We need to go back to a fault-based system in divorce. All states federally need to go to a presumptive joint custody, where 50-50 both physical and legal custody is definitely at the get-go, from the get-go of the case. And third, we have to increase the threshold of evidence in court, in family and juvenile courts. Right now, it's a preponderance of evidence, which is 51%, which is a very fine line for a judge to err and do so on the side of caution. We need to augment that to clear and convincing evidence, which is 75%. If those three changes are made, then fathers, once again, can become instrumental in the lives of their children.
Well, Dean, thank you very much. Thanks for listening in Tampa. Dr. Baskerville, about a minute to respond to Dean.
I would agree with that. In fact, the last point I would state even stronger. I think child abuse and domestic violence should be criminalized. They should be treated as criminal assault like any other. They should be prosecuted and adjudicated under the criminal assault laws, and parents that are accused should be formally charged. They should be tried with a jury, and if they are convicted, they should be sentenced, and if they're exonerated, they should be left in peace. But what we have now is a system where social workers can simply come in, wave the word child abuse or domestic violence around, take off with your children, and maybe you might get a hearing before a judge at some point, but maybe you might not. And this is, again, unacceptable. I think, again, if I had to say one thing, I would endorse all those recommendations. And I think the one principle we need to return to, which I thought at one time was sacred, was the principle that parents was the parent-child bond. Parents should have the right to the custody and care and education of their children.
All right, a quick call from Tim in California. Tim, welcome.
Hello there. I just wanted to add a couple of quick points, and they are very simple. The current presumptive evidence is not given to the judges in California. The judges rubber stamp what the social worker says. The preponderance of evidence is as weighed by a social worker. And then on top of that, we can no longer allow unfounded allegations and hearsay from dismissed allegations to stand as evidence in these hearings. They deprive you of the presumption of innocence. Also, CACI index is unconstitutional, maintained by the Department of Justice, ruled on by the Supreme Court. It must be abolished.
All right, Tim, thank you very much. About 30 seconds to respond to that, Dr. Baskerville.
Yes, again, most Americans are shocked when they discover that this is not the case, that these are not adjudicated as crimes. They're social workers act as judges. Sometimes they have what's called judge surrogates. This is, again, we need to return to basic principles of due process. And if the Constitution were enforced, this entire system would be on the defensive because it's in violation. In fact, in my book, I go through the Bill of Rights and show that virtually every article of the Bill of Rights is routinely violated in family courts. So we need to stand up for the Constitution because the poison from these family courts is spreading throughout the judiciary. It's corrupting the entire judicial system.
Dr. Stephen Baskerville is assistant professor of government at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia, and he's author of the new book, Taken into Custody, The War Against Father, Marriage, and the Family. Dr. Baskerville, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.